Before we get to a lot of manager issues, ask about hubs and these types of things, I want to go back because I want to frame this for people that may not be aware of it. October 10th, 1979, the Edmonton Oilers, no longer the WHA, now playing in the NHL. Their first game, first goal is scored by Kevin Lowe. It's a power play goal. So first power play goal in Oilers history scored by Kevin Lowe. Also, Edmonton Oilers' first fight in NHL franchise history, Kevin Lowe, who fights Grant Mulvey. What do you remember from that game, which was full of firsts, not just for the Oilers, but for you as well, Kevin?
Yeah, a long time ago. The thing that stands out for me was it was our first game. It was the first regular season game, obviously, and it was the first game against an established NHL team. I think an exhibition we played the Winnipeg Jets and the Vancouver Canucks. So going into the Chicago Stadium was fairly daunting. The Oilers were a new entry into the NHL. They had been in the WHA. No one knew how they would fare against in the NHL. We were quickly down 2-0 in the game and thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be a long season. And when I happened, anybody who saw my career would be shocked that I actually scored a power play goal. But I guess Slats hadn't figured out what I really had by then. So it was in the first period of our first game. But the thing that really stands out for me, and this speaks to Wayne Gretzky, who happened to assist on the goal, and it was Wayne's first point in the NHL, was when I scored the goal, I simply thought that, oh boy, we're back in the game. Maybe we got a chance. And Wayne picked up the puck and came into the huddle of us congratulating one another and said, hey, here's the puck. I got it for you. And I said, oh, that's cool. My first goal. He says, no, that's the first goal in the history of the Oilers. Like, pretty cool. And it just speaks to Wayne. His mind is always, it's in another level of what us common folk are. But it was a great night a long time ago. I actually played my 1,000th game in Chicago in the NHL as well. So I have good memories in Chicago.
That's awesome. Berkey, go ahead.
Hey, Kev, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Berkey.
So I like going back to guys' starts. So your junior career in Quebec, you played with Michel Goulet, who's obviously went on to a great NHL career, but you were picked 21st overall in the 1979 draft. So that's after the merger. They gave the four WHA teams the last four picks: Hartford, Winnipeg, Quebec, and then Edmonton. You went to Edmonton 21st overall in what is probably the best first round in the history of the NHL in the draft.
Yeah, and Michel, I think, went 20th as well, right, to Quebec, to the Nordiques. Yeah, it was, I mean, if that is indeed the greatest first round ever, there's a bit of an asterisk beside it because it's when the NHL decided to allow the 18-year-olds to play. So guys like Ray Bourque, who were in that first round, wouldn't have been normally drafted till the following season because he was an 18-year-old. So obviously it's really two drafts in one. And I was fortunate. I was supposed to go high in the first until they added the 18-year-olds. Allan Eagleson was my agent at the time, and he said, oh yeah, you'll definitely be picked before the 10th pick. And then so it took quite a few hours before he phoned me, and I was a little bit, as a kid, you're worried a bit. And he said, well, you're a first rounder. And he said, I said, well, okay, that's good. That's what I wanted. And 21st pick. And I'm thinking, 21st pick, who's even picking 21? And then he said, Edmonton. I said, Edmonton, they're not even in the NHL, are they? So, fast forward to a few months later, I'm on the ice in about my third practice. Wayne skates up to me and says, hey, how about you and I getting a place together? And I'm thinking, I might not even make the team. And I actually said that to Wayne. I said, that'd be great, Wayne, but I got to see if I'm going to make the team. And he said, oh, don't worry, you're going to make the team. So a lot of good memories.
Borny?
Kevin, we had my dad, Bob Bourne, on yesterday, and David Amber asked him a question about their dynasty and sort of the transition into the Oilers dynasty years. And I feel like you're uniquely positioned to weigh in on those times and those years. And I know you would have gone head to head with those best Islanders teams. So maybe you could tell us a bit about what it was like trying to defend those guys and eventually taking the crown from them, wearing it in the years to come.
Well, your dad was a heck of a hockey player and really just an all-round tough guy to play against. He had the skill to score. He could defend. He was tough to defend against, big and tall and could skate. I mean, a guy like him in today's NHL would be making a lot of money. But relative to
he
the
mentions
Islanders,
that sometimes.
no doubt. Relative to the Islanders, they had a run of 4 years of winning. In fairness to them, they were pretty beat up by year five when they played us when we finally beat them. I don't think we're fortunate to catch them at that run. We had to learn in 83 after they swept us in the finals the year before. We had to learn to become a better overall defending team and, play with more structure. And that allowed us to be able to beat them in 1984. But, I mean, we had so much respect for the Islanders. I mean, we won the first game on the island 1-0, and Grant Fuhr literally had to stand on his head. And if we don't do that, who knows what happens? And they might have won five in a row. So as great as we became, we only really became that great because of all the learning lessons we had against the Islanders.
With Kevin Lowe, which of those Islanders players, like as a defenseman, you look at all those forwards, the high-powered octane of the New York Islanders, which one, for you personally, gave you the most fits?
Oh, where do I start? I mean, you start with the big line of Trottier, Bossy, and Gillies. And then, but you go down the line, Bobby Bourne, Bobby Nystrom, Butch Goring. I'm trying to remember the names, but it's like any great team. If you look at the Oilers team that won all the Cups, even difficult defending the fourth lines because there's generally pretty good players playing on those lines. So you had your hands full. I really enjoyed playing the Islanders because they were an honest team. They weren't a dirty team. And, had decent size for my time and I could defend. So I really relished the opportunity to play against. I played against Mike Bossy a lot. Because he was a right winger, and I was a lefty. So, and I grew up watching Mike Bossy play junior in the Quebec League. So, and then happened to, be play against him in the NHL. So, we personally, I think, as I just mentioned, our team learned so much from them. I mean, we're growing as a team as well. We beat the Canadians in 81, and that really started to give us a belief in what we could do. All the great teams, the Canadians of that era, the Islanders, the Flyers to some extent, the Bruins, the Calgary Flames. I mean, you had no easy nights.
I want to ask you a GM question here, Kevin. And in Jason Ferris's Behind the Moves book, there's an interesting quote from Jay Feaster about you. I'm going to get your reaction to this. Kevin was always looking to get LeCavalier. As time went on and John Tortorella and Vinny were perceived to be at odds, he always wanted to make sure that if we ever did anything with Vinny, that he was in that mix. Kevin, did you ever think you were close to getting Vincent LeCavalier?
That's a long time ago, Jeff. I can't honestly say. I think after my dealings with Berkey, everything's a blur. But we were always looking for a centerman. We never really felt that we had, we'd never ever replaced Mess and Wayne. Dougie Wade was a hell of a centerman. He wasn't particularly big. I'd say that. I mean, he was our first line center, but on a championship team, he'd probably be a second line center. So we were always trying to find someone that we thought could complement him and what we had in the roster at the time.
Berkey?
I think a lot of people were really impressed with the 1990 Cup team. That was the first non-Wayne Gretzky Cup in Edmonton. And I really doubted if your team could do it. I was in Vancouver at the time. We saw way too much of you, but I really thought it would be difficult for you guys to do it, but you did. That team was special.
It was. You know, the young guys that came in, Joe Murphy, Adam Graves, and Peter Klima were a big part of it. And what happens when you get good young players that are driven and want to win, and you mix them in with a bunch of grizzled, experienced veterans who'd won. We had the same thing in 94 in New York with the Rangers. It really, you feed off of the young guys. Billy Ranford stood on his head. Steve Smith really came into his own as a top-notch defender. So, there, you know, after you win a championship, people appreciate the pieces of the puzzle much more. Yeah, you know, we didn't know. I'm not even sure where we finished in the regular season that year. But after we got through Winnipeg, you know, I think nobody wanted to win to prove anything about Wayne. But there was a lot of champions in that room. And we just, I mean, for us, a normal season was to play for the cup. So, and we had a little bit of, you know, disappointment in 89 when we were up 3-1 on the Kings and with Wayne, and we lost to them. So we had, even though we'd all won four cups by that point, or most of us, seven of us, I think, there was something to prove there for sure. So a little extra motivation to try to win again.
Kevin, I'm just going to pull the pin on this question and lob it from my safe foxhole here. How was it dealing with Brian Burke as a GM over the years?
You know, Berkey and I, and we should do a whole segment sometime. But, you know, Berkey and I were good friends. I really enjoyed my time as a manager. I enjoyed my calls with him. You know, going way back, guys like Harry Sinden and Serge Savard and Bobby Clark. And, you know, I don't know what it's like today, but there was a real fraternity amongst the managers. I suspect there still is today. And I think that's what made Berkey so upset when I threw out the offer sheet, because he really believed that we were good friends, that I would do that. And, you know, I was just trying to make the Oilers a better organization. And you know, at that point, friendships aside, you got to do what you got to do. So it was entertaining for a while. I remember talking to Dean Lombardi like a couple, 3 months after the episode where Berkey and I were going back and forth at each other on air. And Dean said, and Berkey will appreciate this, Dean was said, well, like that thing with Berkey and you, that you guys are just putting that on. Like, that's just a show, isn't it? I go, no, it's not a show. Why? Like, first of all, I would never do anything like that. Berkey might, but I would never do anything like that. But he just couldn't believe that it was actually, you know, he and I were like, I don't want to say we wanted to kill each other, but good thing there was some distance between us.
Yeah, people should realize, too, on one of those summers, we're good enough friends that I brought you on my fishing trip to Langara, and we had a great time.
But I haven't been back since.
Yeah, well, I think, as I recall, you said to me, you and Kenny Holland both said the same thing. I loved it. It was great. Thanks for bringing me. But don't invite me again next year or the year after. Once every few years is enough. Because it's hard fishing, eh? It's like 12, 14-hour days of fishing. Unless you love to fish, that's a long day.
It's so beautiful out there, though. I mean, B.C. is such an incredible province. And the fishing out on the coast, if anybody hasn't done it or is listening to the show, you got to put it on your bucket list, because it's tough to match that brain experience in the world.
You know, one of the players, I always look sort of for commonalities between general managers, and we've talked a lot on this program and elsewhere with Berkey about Chris Pronger. Give us your thoughts on Pronger as an Oiler, Kevin.
Well, you know, Prong's actually struggled a bit in his first 15, 20, I shouldn't say struggle, but he wasn't as dominant as he was in the second half of the season. You know, and that's what fans need to know, is that even great players like Prongs, it takes a while to adjust to a new team, new city, new coach, you know, new routine. And, but he, if I have this correct, he hadn't scored a goal, and he switched sticks. I think he switched to Warrior sticks at the time, and he scored that night. And then he just went on. I think he had 14 or 15 goals that year. But he was, you know, I really believe that you need to have at least a superstar, probably two, on your team to win a championship. And you know, Prongs wasn't a superstar yet because he hadn't won, but he was starting to escalate there. And to Berkey's credit, he stepped up. You know, Prongs wanted to move out of Edmonton for his reasons. And as a manager, I couldn't fight. And a manager and an ex-player, you know, the old saying, can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. So we weren't going to force him to stay in Edmonton. So we had some time to shop it around. But Berkey was the most aggressive because he realized what a guy like, well, he knew Prongs, of course, but he knew what a guy like Prongs could do for his team. And there was, I tell you, there's some pretty credible managers that passed up the opportunity that had the ability to offer much less than Berkey did, and they didn't pull the trigger. I don't know if they ever regret that to this day, but for some of them, it might have made a difference for their team like it did for the Ducks.
Do you know who you were bidding against? Brian, you know who else was involved in that? Like, who else wanted in on Chris Pronger?
We were at the draft, and Scott Housen, who was the assistant GM, went to four tables, and we could see the four tables. So where were they, Kevin? It was us. Was Boston in there?
Yeah, I don't want to unveil.
Okay.
No, it's okay. But, well, so let's put it this way. Sadly, we had known in December that Prongs wasn't happy. We had always hoped, our management team and Craig McTavish's coach always hoped that, because Matt T had gone to Philadelphia a few years prior as a player, and things weren't great for him there. And he recounted how it takes time, you know, it takes time to adjust to a new city. And so we always hoped that as the season went along and if the hockey gets good, that will change everything. But we knew, so we started to do our homework on who had the best assets. If we're going to move a marquee player like Pronger, you know, we got to get a pile of good assets. And so you just go back and look at the books and see, you know, who there was a whole pile of teams that had good assets. And that's what we did. We reached out to all those teams, let them know what was potentially could happen. And here are the guys that we're targeting, and let us know. And Berkey wouldn't take no for an answer. He offered up a few pieces that we thought could be a good base to rebuild the team, and then kept adding on more until we said yes.
Yeah, so Scott Housen dropped off trade proposals on four tables. And I walked over to Kevin and said, okay, we'll do this. It was a first-round pick, Joffrey Lupul, who had just been our best forward in the playoffs that year. We had gone to the conference finals and lost to Edmonton. And Laddie Smead, who was a top young guy and a wonderful kid that we loved, and a first-round pick. So three assets, and I said, I'll do it. And so then the league wouldn't let us do it. Remember, Kev, we had a tagging room issue or some salary cap issue. So they said, well, you got to wait till July 1st. So I said to Kev, have we got a deal? And he said, yeah, and we shook on it. So on July 2nd, I think it was, Kevin was driving to the shoe swap, and I said, are we doing this or not? He said, well, I have a little hesitation, because I think I'm punching your ticket to the finals. And I said, I think you are too. And if we get to the finals, I'll put in another first-round pick. So that's when we made the deal. He was driving on the road, and he said, you want me to pull over and we'll call it in? I said, no, get to your lake place and we'll do it tomorrow. That's back when I trusted him.
And that additional first pick, I believe, ended up being Jordan Eberle. So, there were some good pieces there, but the old saying goes, generally whoever gets the best player in the deal wins the deal, and that was the case there.
A real nice player in Jordan Eberle, though. Make the case, Kevin, why Edmonton should be a hub city for the NHL.
Yeah, obviously a great facility. We have, I think on the health side, Alberta's done a great job. We have great cooperation with the province to this point. On the, you know, just on the overall reason why it would be great. I mean, Alberta's had a tough go here for the last number of years, and I'm sure there's some people that relish in that thought, not on the hockey side, but on the economy side for whatever reason. But a lot of hardworking people here have created a great province, and I just think that if we're fortunate enough to win the bid, you know, it's not going to make a big, not going to make any difference economically. Maybe a few small businesses might reap the benefits, but it'll be a real, you know, shot in the arm that, you know, the Edmonton, you know, there's a whole whack of proposals and throughout North America, and Edmonton gets it. Lastly, I'll say the main reason is we have an incredible executive staff. Tom Anselmi, Bob Nicholson, you know, talk about two guys that are, you can't find two guys who are more experienced. And then the guys that work under them on the operations side, they've just put in an amazing bid in, and, you know, they deserve it. So I'm not sure how the NHL is going to rule, but of course I'm a little biased, but really hope it works out.